Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We've got football to discuss here with the Professor John Clayton, who joins us at this time every single day. Hello, John.
We want to thank the Seahawks for providing us plenty of information this afternoon. I thought it was great that they got a signing.
They signed Carlos Hyde, which was the, you know, we talked about which of the three do you like better, him, Freeman, or Lynch. He was the guy I really wanted here, so I'm glad they brought him in. Now, what I don't love is that it appears he can make up to $4 million. I don't know what his base is going to be and how tough it'll be to achieve $4 million. I guess that would mean he's starting. Maybe Chris Carson goes down if he plays a certain amount. But the idea of paying a backup $4 million, I didn't love it with Freeman, and I don't love it with Hyde.
Well, they're not paying him $4 million. That's the thing. It's like it's up to $4 million, and that's if he hits incentives and things of that nature. Like if he could repeat the 1,000-yard season, then he can probably make it. Because you figure this is probably, I don't know if it's a $3 million deal. Because the way things, what drives everybody crazy right now in this business is when you start to hear people talk about guarantees that aren't true and start to talk about the deal being up to. Because that's the way the agent's going to sell it. Because, again, if it was $4 million, it's $4 million. But now he has to hit every single incentive, not miss a game, to be able to get $4 million. And so you figure it's $3 million, and it very well could be less. But I think that and a $3 million, $2 million, that's not a bad deal for a running back, particularly one that's 29 years old. He's 6 foot, 229 pounds. He's had a 1,000-yard season and two 900-yard seasons, all in the last 3 out of the 4 years. And so, don't go overboard because they're not paying him $4 million. If they are, that means something's bad's happened to Chris Carson. And Rashad Penny hasn't come back because, say what you want, he might be the backup at the start of the season, but technically he's the number three running back, and number three running backs aren't going to collect $4 million.
All right, John. Yeah, I was it was Lamar Miller got hurt in Houston, and Jim reminded me it was a trade, actually, that Hyde went to Houston for and did pretty well. I mean, you look at his 1,070 yards. I mean, I'm wondering how he's going to fit in. I mean, it's obviously an insurance policy. Does this say anything? I think everybody pretty much understands that Penny's probably going to be on the PUP list. Mm-hmm. But for Carson, what have we heard lately about him? And if he's entirely healthy, it just makes you wonder how much Hyde will get the
exactly
ball.
That's why it's like he's not going to collect $4 million unless something bad happens with Carlos Hyde and with Chris Carson. And so everything seems to be fine right now. Nobody's saying there's any problems. I mean, certainly if he were in the OTAs, you probably wouldn't see him this week because he's still kind of recovering from his hip. But you can see that he's training well. He posted some videos on that. And, I think everything's still set for him to be here as a starter. But now what you do is, and that's why I thought that Hyde was a better fit than Freeman. I concede that Freeman's the better running back. I mean, he's 28 years old. I mean, he's had 2,000-yard seasons, and I know that he's kind of been banged up the last couple of years or didn't fit in the offense for Atlanta last year. But, getting Hyde for less than Freeman, and it turns out, according to Mike Silver, who first reported that the offer for Freeman was from the Seahawks was 1 year, $3 million, with about $1 million in incentives, he's holding his guns to the point where if he can't get what he wants, he's going to sit out the season. And, of course, remember, he was making over $8 million a year, so I guess he's got plenty of money in the bank. But that's why it was wise for Seattle to make the move to go to Hyde. He, to me, is a better fit on first and second downs, much like you have with Chris Carson. And what this does, getting Hyde, opens the door right now for one of the two University of Miami running backs, whether it's Travis Homer or whether it's going to be DJ Dallas, to be able to be necessarily available as a third down back.
And then what would they do with the other back when Penny comes back? Would that signify the end for Travis Homer? What do you think happens with this group?
No, I mean, they can still keep four running backs if they wish. I mean, they might make a roster move there. But, of course, that would take it to five. But, yeah, it could mean that, one might be released, which, depending on how the play goes, it could be Homer. But, you have to first see, if Penny's going to be back by the seventh week. And you'd figure he probably would be. But, at this stage, he's still uncertain. I mean, we do pretty well anticipate that he's going to miss the first six games.
Yeah, and just back to the payday here for Hyde. Really, sorry, Jim. Just even if it's $3 million, that's still a lot of money for a backup. And I think Adam Kaplan told us yesterday that would make, you know, if it were Freeman, it would have made him around the highest paid backup in the league. We've talked about the devaluing of this position. You can find guys all around the league to average 4 yards per carry. We're seeing backup quarterbacks, which is a much more important position, signed for $1 million, a little over $1 million. And so it's interesting to see Hyde, who I wanted as well. I agree with you. I think he fits. I like him on the team. I just don't like him at that price, even if we're talking about $3 million.
Well, and it might be less than $3 million. The incentives might be, you know, in the twos. That we don't know, and we won't know until sometime next week once they put the contract in and we get a chance to evaluate it. You know, because again, you know, don't sometimes rush to judgment on the initial number, because what might seem to be much may not be as much, and particularly at this time of year when there's very few signings. But the last signing by a running back was Chris Thompson going from Washington down to Jacksonville, and that was $1.4 million, and they're in incentives in that contract. So that's why you would think that, okay, you know, here's the $3 million offer on Freeman. He said no, everything stalled. Now you make the next move and you go to Hyde, and again, he's an insurance policy, and so you pay a little bit more for the insurance than maybe you think they should. But again, he is a good enough back to be the starter, because again, remember, I mean, he came off, there's not a lot of 1,000-yard backs in football anymore. And he was one last year, and did it behind an offensive line in Houston that was not all that good.
Yeah, I'm with you, John. I don't care if they're paying him $2 million, $3 million, or $4 million. Looking at Carlos Hyde, reading more about him, looking at his stats, and then last year he had a game where he rushed for over 100 yards against the Titans, and Bill O'Brien talking about how he runs so hard, he gets his pads down, good vision, hard guy to tackle. Looking back, and I know this was 4 years ago, but it's still his running style, a hard, hard running style. 84% of his runs in 2016 was San Francisco, positive yards after contact. San Francisco's offensive line was one of the worst run-blocking offensive lines in the league that year. So you're bringing in a guy that, if you have questions with this offensive line here in Seattle, this is a guy that's, I'm not going to say he's the second coming of Marshawn Lynch, but you like seeing that yak, John. You like that yards after contact stuff that Carlos Hyde's going to bring to Seattle.
Well, plus the thing is that you also mentioned he's been in the division. I mean, he's been in San Francisco for a couple of years, so he knows the lay of the land in the NFC West, and that doesn't hurt. Because, you know, he's been out there. He was with San Francisco for a couple of years. And so, no, that's why I think it's a, to me, Freeman's the better running back. But the better fit for this team and for the need is Hyde. And getting Hyde for less than Freeman, to me, that's very good. You know, sometimes you can't get everybody for the minimum. You know, most people now you can get for the minimum. But, you know, in this case, we know for sure with the incentives there that could take it up to $4 million that it now is going to be above the minimum. But is it $2 million, $2.3, $2.4? You know, because, again, everything has to go right for him to go to $4 million. And if everything goes right, that means it's bad news for injuries with Carson or injuries with Penny.
Well, is this one more indication, though, John, whatever the contract comes out to be for Carlos Hyde, that they're really not all that interested in Clowney or Everson Griffin or another pass rusher?
No, means nothing, really. I mean, it just means that,
Sure?
Yeah. I mean, because, again, it's like, okay. It certainly that makes an impact if they get Clowney back, but they're going to have to, you know, clear whatever the cost is going to be, $10 million or 10 plus, and that won't be easy. But again, I mean, you can look at candidates and say, as long as it doesn't get to KJ Wright or Bradley McDougal, I mean, you still have a bunch of guys with, you know, the $2.133 million base salary, or, you know, because, you know, like, for example, maybe it would be Lano Hill, it could be, you know, Brandon Jackson, anything like that. I mean, there's enough wiggle room in there. But what it did do is takes care of the insurance policy at the running back position, and now it really only leaves one thing, and that's a run-stopping defensive tackle.
You can text in any questions you've got for the professor, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to some of your questions as well. But, John, what is all this nonsense about Russell Wilson wanting Antonio Brown in Seattle?
Well, I mean, it's one where it's like, okay, you know, he wants star power, and there's more star power in Antonio Brown. But I think that, you know, Russell recognizes that the team won't be able to do anything for him for a couple months. And so I give it a 5% chance, right? And so he would like him, but it's not like it's demand or anything like that. You know, what Russell's looking for is, get me the best players they can. Like today was a good one. They got Carlos Hyde. You know, it's like, okay, so now if Josh Gordon comes back and gets reinstated, you know, they can sign him when that happens. And so, you know, if it doesn't happen, maybe they would consider, or they'll consider him. But again, yes, Russell just wanted to get as many good players on this team as possible. You know, today they got a good one. They got Carlos Hyde. If they can get Josh Gordon, that's a good one. And so, you know, what Russell wants to do is win. Simple as that. And it's not a demand or anything else. It's just one of those things that the odds of it happening are very low. And the fact that nothing's going to happen in the next 2 months involving Antonio Brown, nothing. I mean, maybe you've got something else on some other team. You know, Tom Brady wanted him down in Tampa Bay, and, you know, he's not getting him down there because Bruce Arians coached him in Pittsburgh and doesn't want the parts of him. And so it's like, yeah, you want the best players you can to make you the best team you possibly can. And so, you know, he may want him, but it's not like some demand or anything like that.
Well, what is the likelihood that Brown's even going to be able to play? He's still under investigation for sexual assault. He had that incident with the assault of the delivery driver at his house. I mean, he's got, outside of being what appears to be an absolute combustible figure in a locker room, mm-hmm. he's got a lot of issues off the field that haven't been resolved yet. So the idea that he's even going to be available to play seems pretty remote.
Yeah, that's why it's like, okay, this is not a front burner issue. This is one where it's like, okay, yeah, Russell wants the best players he can. Like, for example, you know, when the Freeman possibility came up, you can see it's like, okay, that's trying to satisfy Russell. You get a guy that you know, had 2,000-yard seasons, who catches the ball well out of the backfield, can be elusive running the football. But then, you know, his demands stayed too high. So it's like, okay, you move on. You go to the next guy, and they get a good one with a 1,000-yard back in Carlos Hyde. Now, in this case, it's like, you know, I'd say the chances of him even being available is still, you know, much less than 30%. And I might be high in that category, because you're right. I mean, he's on an investigation that has now gone on now for, what, 9 months? Because it started back in September, and there's no sign that they can even do it. And the likelihood is, because I think that you remember when New Orleans went and kind of tested out the possibility of bringing him in last year, I think that, I don't know exactly what they heard from the league, but, you know, would you want to then, you know, put money into a situation with a back or a wide receiver that could end up on the exempt list, and you don't know if you're going to get him or not get him? You know, that uncertainty is what you don't need. That's why there's nothing going on now with Antonio Brown. Maybe it'll happen something in the summertime, but by then, I would have to think they'll have Josh Gordon signed, and there's no need to bring in another receiver.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, if there's ever a case of you could unscrew one guy's head and screw another guy's head on top of his body, my God, Antonio Brown, he's just such an incredibly athletic player. But like we talked about, and Bob always says, you know, with Josh Gordon, totally different story, because he kind of is hurting himself. But Antonio Brown, my gosh, it's just been such a good team this last year. I just can't imagine, even if he was eligible, that you would want to, even Russ, mm-hmm. that Russ would want to bring that into this locker room.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think everybody's trying to sell things that, you know, aren't going to be sellable. I mean, it was, oh, got to get Jameis Winston as a backup quarterback. Oh, got to go get, you know, Cam Newton as a backup quarterback.
Nobody wanted Jameis here, John. Come on, man.
I know that. Well, I mean, well, you might have. But, but no, it's like, the right move was to get Geno Smith back. I mean, so far they're stepping, you know, all in the right circles. I mean, again, it would have been great if Clowney did come back, and it still would be great if he comes back. But this team became better today with Carlos Hyde being added at running back, and it became better early in the week when they officially announced that Geno Smith was being signed as the backup quarterback.
Hey, John, we've got news about Joe Flacco. Yeah. He's signing with the Jets.
Well, I mean, how bad do you think Cam Newton feels today? Okay, so here's Cam Newton, who's been waiting and waiting and waiting, and knowing that it's going to be hard for him to get an offer from a team because, you know, he needs a physical. I mean, he's coming off a Liz Frank injury. He's had shoulder problems. You know, he got released after the start of free agency, so he didn't get a chance to get in the first wave and get into a team before the physicals all shut down. And so now here you get Joe Flacco for a one-year, $1.5 million contract. And guess what? He had neck surgery in April, right before the draft. And that next surgery is going to keep him out till mid-August or September. I mean, you know, they put $1.5 million, and again, this is without a physical. you know, most likely. And so they put $1.5 million into a quarterback that you don't even know if he's going to be able to be playing this year. Very curious. By the way, in the meantime, you've now blown the relationship with Jamal Adams.
John, not only does Tom Brady have somebody like Jim Moore all over his back about being an old guy, he's now got men of the cloth taking shots at him. Did you see this tweet from Bishop Thomas Tobin out there in New England? Said, Bob Kraft is auctioning a Super Bowl ring for charity. Very admirable indeed. But is it true that Tom Brady bid on it because he knows it's the only way he'll get another ring?
Really?
How about that?
Man.
From a bishop.
The bishop took a shot at Brady like that. Man, could you imagine how many times that Peyton Manning's going to probably repeat that while they're golfing on Sunday? Man, you got beat up by a bishop. It's like, you figure a good gesture by Tom Brady because, again, it raised the price and it showed that he was willing to pay and, you know, contribute to a good cause. And so it's like, okay, but it's like the bishop.
Well, he didn't actually bid on it.
Oh, he didn't?
John,
oh.
He didn't bid. I think that was a joke. That
okay.
Yeah, so he just said any truth to the rumor that he bid on it because that was the only way he'd get another ring.
Yeah, but then it's like, it's pretty interesting because, you know, I tend to agree with the bishop. I mean, hey, as nice as it is for Tom Brady going down there and making the Bucs a legitimate playoff contender, I don't see them going to the Super Bowl because, you know, when you think about what they've done is that on a decent team, a team that, you know, probably can win 10 games this year, I think it can be a wild card. You know, all they've added was Brady, Gronkowski, two backup offensive linemen, and seven draft choices. That's it. They're one for additions to a team. They're probably one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the National Football League.
All right, John, go deep into your database. Who is going to win this little golf matchup? Who would you take? You've got Peyton Manning and Phil Mickelson versus Tiger and Brady.
Are they playing 18 holes?
I believe so.
Yeah, and so it's like somewhere by the 16th or 15th hole, Mickelson's going to choke and make some bad moves and set it up for Tiger and Peyton to win.
Tiger and Brady.
Okay. Tiger and Brady, yeah. No, it's Tiger and Peyton. Yeah.
It's Tiger and Manning against Mickelson and Brady.
Yeah, so you know, Mickelson.
Oh. Mickelson, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mickelson will make a couple bad shots. You know, Tiger will come on. Peyton will be solid, and you know, they'll win with you know, Mickelson trying to laugh. Oh yeah, well, just tough shot down in 15, top shot in 16.
Well, and John, we'll have all the details tomorrow when the golf show returns following the John
the golfing
Clayton show. At 9 o'clock with Sean Crew and myself, and I know that everyone is really looking forward to that, especially Dave.
Dave always has looked forward to it.
Oh, yeah, man. Can't get enough golf. Can't get enough.
Oh, okay. You know what else I'm looking forward to, John? How's that for a segue? Seeing Deion Buchanan in Atlanta and what he's going to do for that Falcons defense. Are you going to tell me that it's an upgrade for Atlanta? What about the addition of the Coug down there in Atlanta, John?
Well, it's a needed move for sure because, you know, they were like one linebacker short, you know, particularly after, you know, losing a good linebacker in free agency when Devontae Campbell took the one-year, $6 million deal in Arizona. But what I like about it is, one, I think that, you know, he can get in there immediately and start. I think what's nice is that, you know, he can fit that role as a positionless player, you know, the guy that can be, you know, playing a little safety, a little linebacker, if he needs to, can maybe do a little bit of coverage in the slot. So I think that's a great signing. I really do. And a good fit and a good need.
Hey, John, what's going to happen with Dak Prescott in this deal? I heard somebody talking this morning that he has a desire to go the way of Kirk Cousins and get a couple of franchise tags that are going to be really, really exorbitant and then sign the deal. I mean, it seems like there's so many different stories coming out around him and what was offered, what was rejected. No, that's not true. What do we know about what is the reality of this situation?
Here's the story. Dallas wants to sign him to a five-year deal. Dak wisely wants a four-year deal because most quarterbacks in their second contract get four-year deals, okay? The report that Chris Sims surprisingly was wrong on was that there was a five-year, $175 million deal that he turned down. Well, it was never that. Both sides rejected that, and the reason is, you know, Jerry Jones is offering slightly less than $35 million. He's willing to make Dak the second highest paid quarterback right behind Russell Wilson. Okay, and so you know, another report came out that Dak wanted $45 million a year, and that was completely wrong. So where you have this stand right now, Dak wants in above Russell Wilson, and Jerry wants to pay him under Russell Wilson, and Jerry wants the five-year deal. And the reason he wants the five-year deal is usually they carry $15 to $20 million of prorated extra cap from deals that they have to do, replacing base salary with signing bonus so they can stay under the cap. And so that puts them in a position where they want to need the 5 years to try to stretch out the proration. But that's unreasonable, I think, to try to get both. I mean, you're not going to be able to get Dak to do the 5 years and less than $35 million. So the trade-off is, okay, you get the 34-8 or whatever it's going to be, and you get the four-year deal, and then you come back in year five and then try to get the next contract.
All right, John, Frank Gore saying that he's excited to be reunited with Adam Gase, and I think we've talked about this before, but I want to hear it again. 15,347 yards, we'll see what he ends up with after this year. Frank Gore, Hall of Famer, yes or no?
100%, yeah. I mean, there's nobody that has that kind of numbers that doesn't get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's done it for so long and done it for so well, and you know that's going to rattle Le'Veon Bell, because you can see that Frank will go in there, work hard, do a good job, and then take some carries away from Le'Veon, and he won't be happy about that, and it'll be a little internal mess, but he's a Hall of Fame back who is liked by a lot, and I like him a lot too.
John, Jeremy Fowler's reporting from ESPN.com that the Arizona Cardinals have interest in Everson Griffin. Do you think he'll end up there?
I don't think so, because Everson's more of a 4-3 defensive end. They're a 3-4 defensive team, and so I think that's going to be a tough fit. I mean, yeah, he's certainly one of the better players on the street, but they've done enough good things, I think, on their defensive line. Now, remember, as it stands with what they've done this offseason, they could have four new starters in the front seven. And, they're feeling better about the defense, but I'm trying to see how he would fit into the 3-4.
John, you doing the show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 until 9.
All right. Taking calls tomorrow from 8 to 9. John, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Tuesday.
Okay, that sounds great.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. It is that time, everybody. You look forward to it every Friday. You can curl up with your favorite blanket, your pillow, sit cross-legged, and get ready for story time with Dave Wyman. It's coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A little programming note. Story time with Dave Wyman will take place at 5 o'clock today. I spoke too soon because I was just so excited to hear it. But we've got to get insight into the newest acquisition of your Seattle Seahawks. Carlos Hyde signs a one-year deal with the team. And here to tell us about Carlos Hyde, John McClain from the Houston Chronicle is with us on the hotline. John, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're good. You know, we had been talking for a few days about the backup running back spot for the Seahawks team. There was no secret that they were looking for a veteran. Devontae Freeman is the guy they made an offer to. Marshawn Lynch had been here last year and was mentioned as a possibility. And Carlos Hyde was the one I think we all kind of settled on, but thinking he might come here at a veteran minimum. Now it sounds like he got substantially more and is in line to make a lot more as a backup running back. First of all, just the without knowing all of the particulars of the deal, are you surprised at the dollar amount that he could make as a backup?
What is that? $3 million?
He could make up to $4 million.
Yeah, well, he'll have to be starting and hit every possible incentive to make that. But how often do you get a 1,000-yard back to be a backup at this late? And the way Carlos ended up in Houston and having his best season, he bounced around the NFL like a pinball. And the Texans weren't looking for a running back until the starter, Lamar Miller, suffered a torn ACL in the last preseason game. They had traded for Duke Johnson, a real good receiver with Cleveland, so they had him in the backup role. They didn't want him to be a starter, and all of a sudden they needed a starter. So they had a guard, Martinez Rankin. They traded him to the Chiefs. for Hyde. And I didn't think much about it at the time. Carlos hadn't had a good year since 2016, and he just fit Bill O'Brien's offense. He fit in their running game, which has been 8-9 the last 2 years, and he rushed for career high 1,070 yards, had 6 touchdowns. That tied the second most of his career. And at one point in his career, he was a really good receiver. They didn't need him to do that last year. They had a lot of receivers, including Duke Johnson. I think if Carlos had been a full-time back, he might have gained 1,200 or 1,300 yards, but he spent a lot of time getting breathers while they played Duke Johnson in passing situations. They tried to sign him to a new deal. They offered him at the combine 2 years, $10 million. Same deal Mark Ingram got from Baltimore. He turned it down. And so they moved on. Bill O'Brien has always been enamored of David Johnson of Arizona. And when they worked on the deal for DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona, O'Brien insisted David Johnson be included because he thinks he can turn around Johnson's career like he did Hyde. And Carlos is a good guy. He's a good interview, always cooperative, worked hard, had some long runs, averaged 4.4 yards a carry. I think that's his most since 2015 or 16. So Pete Carroll's got to be really happy with this deal. John Schneider, of course, to get a guy like him to come in a backup role.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know that Bill O'Brien was enamored with David Johnson. That's good. It tells the story why they didn't bring Carlos Hyde back. But what kind of a teammate was he? What kind of a guy? I mean, if everything goes right here in Seattle, Chris Carson's healthy and he's going to be a backup. Is he the kind of guy that can handle that?
Well, nobody knows more about injured backs than the Seahawks that had the misfortune of dealing with. Hyde's been a starter. He's been a backup. And he's only had 1,000 yards received, 1,000-yard season. He's going to be 30 in September. Carlos is not going to make any waves. He'll play whatever role he's brought in to play. And you hope, ideally, Carson stays healthy and Hyde doesn't play much. But you know, there's a good chance he will. The way the Seahawks like to run the ball, he'll fit right in. Just a terrific addition, especially this time of the offseason.
Well, and John, I was going to ask you about his running style. It seems like he runs really hard, and you already said that he fits the Seahawks style, but maybe he's got some similarities to Chris Carson, the violent running style with Carlos Hyde, too.
Carlos runs between the tackles. He can bounce outside. He had several long runs last year. He's really tough. He breaks some tackles. He can get yak, and he's not going to rock the boat. Now, if you need him to catch the ball, he hadn't done it in a while, but at one point with the 49ers, he had 57 catches. With the Texans, he didn't catch a cold, but that wasn't his fault. They just didn't throw him the ball because Deshaun Watson had too many other options. So I don't know. I didn't see him in that role last year, but when it comes to running, he is a north-south runner.
Is he a guy that was popular with the fans? I guess anybody who succeeds is popular, but are they going to be upset that he is now out of the situation there and moved on to another team?
Well, he's been out of the situation. Once he turned down $5 million a year, they moved on. And that's why they were never in the running to re-sign him. They liked him. You know, the fans, no matter what Bill O'Brien does, the fans are not going to like it. Doesn't matter what he does, and especially – the only good thing about the DeAndre Hopkins trade was it got fans to quit talking about O'Brien going for fourth down on his own 31 with a 24-7 lead at Arrowhead Stadium, which backfired, and they choked the 24-point lead. So nobody's talking about that anymore. They're still talking about Hopkins. And of all the moves they don't like that Bill O'Brien has made, Carlos Hyde be way down the list.
Yeah, we've actually talked about Bill O'Brien up here in Seattle quite a bit. I know mostly it's Bob outraged over some of the moves that he's made, and they've not been very, you know, popular or made sense, but he seems to be having success. We heard a story, John, that, and I don't know how accurate this is, but that the owner is actually afraid of Bill O'Brien. Tell us a little bit about Bill O'Brien.
Give me a break. The owners are not afraid of O'Brien. Give me a break. And O'Brien waited too long to trade Clowney. And Jacob Martin actually ended up with more sacks than Clowney. But, and they love Jacob. They think he's going to be a really good pass rusher. I don't know. You know, he's too light in the butt to be a regular starter. And I think Clowney should go back to the Seahawks with that one-year offer because they play a front that's conducive to him where, you know, he – I think he may be – he may end up taking a lot less – well, he already is going to take a lot less than he wanted, but I think he should go back there, play on a one-year deal or whatever it is, and then hope he stays healthy and has a big year. But so far, Clowney's not getting $100 million that he thinks he's worth, and it would behoove him to be back there playing for the Seahawks again.
What about Deshaun Watson, John? You think he's going to get $40 million a year?
I do. Don't know when it'll be. They won't. They haven't even barely had preliminary negotiations, nothing since the combine, no matter what you read in the national media or here. And until Dak Prescott's situation is settled, I don't expect that his agent, David Mugalata, will get serious about negotiations. You know, Watson will end up being the second highest. Mahomes the highest, and Prescott will be the highest because he'll sign first. And if he doesn't, they have that July 15th franchise deadline, and then maybe then the Texans and Watson will get serious. But I believe it's not so much the average per year. It's the guarantee, length of the contract. He's going to get over $100 million. Prescott's going to get over $100 million. And, guys, I don't know how you feel about it, but in this climate that we are in which owners could take a financial bath, I would get $100 million when I could, because if they don't play with fans this year and owners take a big hit, salary cap's going down. That big bucks might not be available to 2022.
No, I think you're exactly right. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. John, we really appreciate you taking some time with us on short notice. Thanks so much for the insight. Stay safe out there.
Guys, my pleasure. Thank you very much. Enjoy watching Carlos Hyde.
Thank you. There he is, John McClain. Good to talk to him. Meanwhile, Washington State's head coach, Nick Rolovich, is looking forward. He's looking forward and looking at the bright side of the possibility of no fans. How about that? We're going to hear exactly what that means when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Yeah, I'm more of a griller slash barbecue guy. So, you know what I mean? DK, he thinks he's a chef. I'm not really into being a chef. You know what I mean? I have my own personal chef for that. You know what I mean? So, I don't think he's touching me with barbecue and a grilling. So, I'm good on that aspect. But, you know what I mean? My barbecue and grilling, I give myself about a 7. I'm only about a year and a half there. So, I'm just getting better with time, like fine wine.
Getting better with time like fine wine, says Quandre Diggs, who was asked who the better cook is, himself or DK Metcalf. Apparently, DK has been hosting a show on Instagram called Cooking with Chef Metcalf. Quandre Diggs, apparently pretty confident in his barbecue skills and letting us all know he's got a personal chef, which must be nice.
Yeah. Well, he's from Texas. Are you guys, would you say that you're a good barbecuer? I would say that I have not gotten any better. I don't entirely kill the chicken. You know, my wife likes the chicken breasts barbecued, and I've got that down, but I'm not very good at it. I don't feel like it's something that I guess I care to get better at. Can you guys barbecue?
No, I don't own a barbecue, and I don't have any idea. I don't cook.
What? You don't own a barbecue?
No, I don't own one. I make egg whites, and that's pretty much it as far as cooking.
That's the only thing you prepare is egg whites.
Well, I make sandwiches, and I eat a lot of takeout, and then my girlfriend will do some cooking. So I find my way around it.
Well, I like to think I'm good at beer chugging and barbecuing. I don't know about anything else, but, I mean, I've got two barbecues. I've got one, a propane one, and then a Traeger grill. The only thing about, and, you know, with fish, you got to make sure you don't overcook fish, because once it's overcooked, you're done. So I try and take it off a little early, and then if I have to take it back, I'll do that. The thing with the Traeger grill, I know we'll get... Well, because one's like a smoker and one's a barbecue. The only thing about the Traeger grill, and it's great, they work out great. You should get one if you don't have one or any kind of smoker. But you don't really feel like you're barbecuing or doing anything because you're just following the recipe and what they tell you to do, and you just throw it in there and leave it alone for like 8 hours.
That sounds like my speed.
Tom will tell you that this is going to be one of the few times he and I are going to play against each other in golf. We certainly competed on the field, but in golf, we've actually been partners a decent amount. And not a great record, right, Tom? I mean, really.
Poor.
I mean, the last time we played, we got beat. The last time we played, we got beat by an 84-year-old and a 77-year-old, like closed out on 15. I mean, it was. I've had some disappointing defeats. I know, you know, Tom hadn't had that many at all, but that was a tough one for both of us. So we're each picking up, each kind of upgrading in our partners this time playing with Tiger and Phil.
That's the voice of Peyton Manning as they promote the match, which will be coming up this Sunday on TBS, I think at noon, TNT as well as True TV, HLN. It's going to be on all over the place, and they did a little Zoom interview with Ernie Johnson. Peyton's just an enjoyable guy to me. I love hearing the guy talk, and it's interesting to hear that he and, you know, it was always pitted as Peyton versus Tom, and, you know, who's going to get the best. Almost adversarial. It was obviously competition on the field, but sounds like they've had a friendship for quite a while.
Yeah, he is just a really entertaining guy and just naturally funny. I mean, it's not so much the things he says, it's the way he says them. And I've mentioned this a few times, the Peyton Place series that he's doing. Yeah, he's really good. He's just a good interviewer. He's funny as heck. At the end of every one of them, he takes a selfie with whoever it is, whether it's like Billy White Shoes Johnson. He goes, you know, kind of all through all these different things, you know, in the NFL history. But this is going to be really fun to watch. I mean, the golf, I'm curious to see how good Brady and Manning are. But, you know, the one last weekend was better golf, I'm sure, than you're going to see in this case. But wasn't as entertaining as I think this one will be.
No, it will be fun, and they're going to play match play on the front nine. Whatever the lowest score is, you'll win the hole. And number five is going to be of particular interest because all of the players are only going to use one club from driving on the fairway, on the green, say, you know, choose a 5-iron, 7-iron, putter, whatever you're going to use. You can only use one club on that hole, so that should be fun. And then on the back nine, they're going to have alternate shot after both drives. After all the players hit their drives, they take the best drive and then alternate all the way into the hole. And I saved the best part for last. If you're really not interested in golf and seeing any of the action, Charles Barkley is going to be one of the commentators, so I don't think you want to miss that. And if you want more details, the golf show tomorrow at 9 a.m. with Sean Crew, 710 ESPN Seattle. We'll have all of them for you following John Clayton.
You should bring that up more, Jim. People aren't aware.
Okay, Bob, I will.
We're not probably not going to have another opportunity to go through this like this, or we hope we don't, but it'll definitely be, like, I'll be able to yell at the other coaches on the other sideline and make fun of them. I think that'll be fun. I mean, they'll hear me, too. Sometimes I do it and they don't hear me, but, you know, this will it'll be very interesting.
The voice of Cougar head coach Nick Rolovich on KXLY4 News talking about it's going to be fun to make fun of other coaches who will actually be able to hear him since there will be nobody in the building potentially. I got to tell you, I like Rolovich's style. I don't know if he's going to be a good coach, a great coach, a bad coach, but he's very likable. He's the opposite of the former head coach that was out there. So he seems like an easy guy to root for. He's got a sense of humor. He seems completely bought in on the Coug tradition and what it means to be a Coug. So I'm rooting for him to do well. He seems like a good dude.
I was trying to think about some of the coaches that we've seen, the fights. I know Chuck Knoll back in the day just ripped Jerry Glanville after a game at the handshake afterwards. I'm just talking about the screaming back and forth that he was referring to. And then remember the thing with Harbaugh and the Detroit Lion coach where he slapped him on the back real
hard? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, it's interesting that when the coaches get into it like that. I mean, usually they're pretty nice to each other and everything, but yeah, I agree with you, Bob. He's such a likable guy just from the things that I've seen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this next season, and you know whether we have to watch on TV or go to Martin Stadium, but Nick Rolovich, a breath of fresh air for me anyway, and I think a lot of Cougar fans. And he's also embracing recruiting in the state, which I like to see. He got a kid from Mount Si this week, Andrew Edson, a tight end, defensive end, and seems to be stepping up the efforts within the state borders. And I know Mike Leach was more national in his recruiting, and I like getting some of the kids from in-state, and you talk about, boy, Nick Rolovich has really embraced the whole Coug thing, and I just love that, man. Go Cougs.
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing him out there and what he can get done. All right, coming up, I was a little anxious. I promoted it too early, but it's happening now. Story time with Dave Wyman. You've been waiting, and the payoff is about to come your way. Next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.